You know, Donald Trump's America wasn't usually accused of being a communist state driven by, you know,
the politics of envy.
You know, and even the old mother country. In the UK, they have forms of property and wealth tax that are significant compared to what we do here in Australia. So we've kind of got away with it for a long time, not doing anything about it, not accidentally, of course. And it's been very good for those who've accumulated these vast amounts of wealth.
One for mum, one for dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just...
G'day and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and today we are going to talk about the explosion of wealth in Australia and why we should all be concerned that wealth is pretty much missing from the most recent intergenerational report, and I think probably a few more before that, and why this is an issue that we should all actually care quite a bit about.
From mining juggernauts to tech entrepreneurs, we have the list of the wealthiest people in the country.
It seems Australia's rich are only getting richer, and for more.
Australian mining magnate Gina Rinehart is now the world's richest woman, according to Business Review Weekly.
There's a recession, there's a pandemic, but as you've just mentioned, the rich have actually gotten richer. And
Gina Rinehart has been in the BRW rich list for 21 years.
And sitting second under her is Andrew Forrest, who.
Call them the three P's, the Pilbara, pizza boxes, and PCs. That's where people have made the money this year.
Fascinating list when you consider we are in the middle of a pandemic and a recession, and yet people seem to be getting richer.
Oh, you'd never get a good rich lister down. Oh, you never write them off.
So today I'm delighted to introduce our guests, Dave Richardson, who wrote a paper on wealth that we're going to be talking about today, and our chief economist, Richard Dennis. G'day, Dave and Richard. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Thanks, Eb.
Richard, I'll start with you. Before we kind of get into the deep end here, what's the difference between wealth and income to kick us off?
Right. So wealth refers to all of the assets that an individual or a community or a country has. So your household goods, your bike, your car, your house, if you're lucky, your enormous share portfolio, all of those investment properties you have. So wealth refers to what economists refer to as the stock of assets. And usually when we think about wealth, we're particularly interested in the kind of assets that generate an income stream. So investment properties have rent, shares pay dividends, and a lot of people in our society get a lot of their income from the wealth that they've already accumulated. Whereas income is, yeah, how much money you get coming in each week or each month or each year. So there are people out there who earn high incomes who have no wealth because they spend, you know, they earn $100,000 a year, they spend $100,000 a year. There are some people out there who have a lot of wealth. Maybe they live in a very big house, but they don't have a lot of income. So wealth and income are both important, but the really important thing about wealth is that people with lots of shares and lots of investment properties get a lot of their income from their wealth, and we call that passive income.
Okay. So, Dave, you've written a whole paper about the explosion in wealth in Australia. What was it that really prompted you to start looking at what was happening to wealth in Australia?
Yes, well, I tend to keep an eye on what the Australian Bureau of Statistics put out every day. And one day they brought out some figures on household wealth in Australia. And looking at those, you know, wow. Households in Australia have a net worth of $12.7 trillion.
That's $12.7 trillion with a T.
That's right. We're beyond billions.
Well beyond.
And to be clear, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So if you've got yourself $1 billion and you had 1,000 friends, then 1,000 billionaires would make a trillionaire. And the wealth in Australia is 12.7 trillion. So, Eb, I don't know where you're hiding it, but, you know, so someone's got it.
It's under my mattress.
Meanwhile, we're officially a nation of millionaires. The latest Australian Bureau of Statistics data shows average household wealth has passed $1 million for the first time.
Where does all this wealth come from? Well, despite the fact that we have seen a slight decline in property prices of late, it is actually mainly down to property prices.
A landmark report out today forecasts that Australia will have budget deficits for the next 40 years.
Intergenerational report are sobering news, and that is that we're going to have to do more with less money.
OK, that figure came out. Then a couple of days later, the government published their intergenerational report, which is something that comes out every 5 years and basically designed to scare us into worrying about whether the country can afford things like the ageing population. And so they express the future fiscal burden, those sorts of things, as a share of GDP. And I thought back to those figures, hey, hang on, apart from GDP, we should also be looking at things like wealth to inform us about capacity to pay. And not only wealth itself. Those same figures I saw showed that in the 12 months leading up to wealth being 12.7 trillion, wealth in Australia had actually jumped by 1.7 trillion. And that's almost as much again as GDP itself. So
let me interrupt there, Dave. Just to be clear, our wealth suggests that we had an extra 1,700 billionaires somewhere in Australia.
That's right. Either that or all our present billionaires got so much richer.
Yep.
And things like the rich list that comes out every now and again tends to show that sort of thing. So that what we do know is that wealth is very skewed.
So to just repeat that, the thing that prompted your interest was, first of all, that overall $12.7 trillion figure, which is huge, but then also that figure has kind of grown quite a bit, as much as GDP, basically, in the last couple of quarters. And then thirdly, we had the intergenerational report coming out saying, ooh, we can't afford this aging population, but it's ignoring this whole bucket of wealth that's just out there. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
So what most people probably don't realise is that when we measure GDP, gross domestic product, because that's a measure of our national income, like, you know, how much money we all earn, that doesn't actually have our wealth built into it. So we have our GDP, our national income of around $2 trillion a year. But what Dave's saying is, well, GDP of $2 trillion a year, give or take, that's a big number. But our wealth is actually more than $12 trillion. So when we look at things like the cost of aging and we divide them by GDP, Treasury goes, ooh, scary, scary, this getting old thing's a bit of a worry. Whereas when you divide the cost of aging by our wealth, it's like, what are you worried about? We've got heaps.
So basically, like, if I was going to, like, a bank for a loan and they'd just be looking at my income in terms of my capacity to pay for things but ignoring that $12.7 trillion that I've got hiding under the mattress in terms of being able to afford it.
That's right. That's right. The other thing too that struck me is that, you know, these figures go back to 1988. So wealth at the moment, $12.7 trillion, which is about 6.5 times GDP, but that's grown fantastically from about $1.3 trillion, I think it was, which was only about 3.5 times GDP. So what's been happening is that wealth has been growing much more rapidly than income. And if you assume those trends continue into the future, wow, we're going to be fantastically wealthy. Well, perhaps not you and I so much, but somebody in Australia is.
But we won't be able to afford a healthcare system that looks after old people, Richard.
Well, that's right. And that's why I think this research is so important, because so much of the doom and gloom we hear is, oh, you know, in the future there'll be lots of old people, and in the future old people will spend a bit of money on health. How are we going to cope? But at the same time, we're predicting this enormous increase in wealth. And guess what? Older people are far more likely to accumulate that wealth and see that growth than younger people. So don't get me wrong, of course there's poverty amongst older Australians, and women are far more likely to be poor when they're older than men. But we're about to see the wealthiest generation Australia has ever seen. And all of this massive increase in house prices, for example, is flowing incredibly to those who, by definition, already own one or more houses. And guess what? They're older people. So here we are worrying about how are we going to pay for the healthcare of older Australians, while at the same time we're going, boy, older Australians are about to get an enormous amount of money. Now, again, we're going to need to pay attention to equality there and equity and distribution, you bet. But as Dave's numbers make clear, all of this enormous increase in wealth, guess what, makes it easier to afford these things the government says they can't afford.
Yeah. And Dave, thinking about that equity issue there, I mean, we've been joking about where are all these missing 1,000 billionaires. Like, where is that wealth? Who has it?
One of the richest people in Australia is Gina Rinehart, of course. I put some stats together just before this, and we think the CEOs of some of our biggest companies make extremely high incomes, and it's rather obscene.
Every half an hour, Australia's richest person, Gina Rinehart, grows $1 million wealthier.
And meet Lawrence Escalante. Now he's worth more than $2 billion. Ruslan Kogan, the founder and CEO of Kogan.com. He's worth $543 million. Gina Rinehart, the mining juggernaut, is worth more than $36 billion.
So the head of the Commonwealth Bank makes something like $6 million per annum. Gina Rinehart, every morning she wakes up, she's $5.9 million richer than she was yesterday.
It's not a bad effort.
Exactly.
What have you been doing your life, Ebony?
So the obscene banker income is Gina Rinehart's capital gains for one day.
Far out.
Dave, are you saying that we've been too hard on wealthy bankers?
They're not the real culprit.
No, they should be in the sights too. And, you know, we have no idea about, well, I don't have any idea about her tax affairs, but we can probably bet that she wouldn't be paying much tax on that 5.9 million she's getting in capital gains every day.
So Gina Rinehart probably isn't paying much tax on that 5 million or so she makes every morning.
That's right. In Australia, the tax system only taxes capital gains when they're realised, that is, when the owner of some property sells. And most of these rich people don't need to sell, so they don't. And if they do, then capital gains are taxed at half the rates of other income anyway. So what we find in Australia is that, on average, roughly capital gains are taxed at roughly 2% per annum.
Two.
Exactly. For the country as a whole, income tax hovers around 21 to 24% of GDP, something of that order.
So let me get this straight. All of us, most of us, are income earners, bringing home a wage every day that we kind of pay tax on throughout the year. And how much tax is Gina Rinehart paying on her $5 million every morning when she makes that capital gains?
Well, unless she sells some of her property, she won't pay any capital gains tax at all. And I don't know how much property she buys and sells every year, but I suspect mainly she's just holding on to what she's got. And so that most years she'd be liable for almost nothing in capital gains tax.
Now, and if, of course, if she lived in another country, they might have what's called a wealth tax, which means, you know, every year you pay some tax on your wealth. But in Australia, we don't have a wealth tax. And the way we've invented or designed our capital gains tax means that not only do you only pay it in the unlikely circumstance that someone like Gina Rinehart sells something, but even when she sells it, there's this wonderful thing called the 50% capital gains tax discount, which means that she pays half as much tax on a capital gain as she would pay if it was, if she was a banker earning a high income.
Now, I'm not an economist, but that doesn't really sound fair to me, Dave.
It's very unfair. The idea that you can earn an income passively and pay zero tax on it, while those that actually exert themselves for 40 hours a week in menial tasks are paying perhaps 25-30% of their income in tax, must strike most people as pretty outrageous. And I think that they've got away with it for quite a while. We used to have higher taxes on unearned income, which it used to be called.
Oh, I like that, actually, unearned income.
Yeah.
Not as much as Gina.
As wealth looms larger and larger relative to all the other magnitudes in the economy, I think it's inevitable that sooner or later we're going to have some sort of wealth tax. You know, that'll at least get back some of the missing capital gains that we've had all these years.
Yeah.
One in three of Australia's biggest corporations pays no tax. And while the rest of the country was hit hard during the pandemic, Australian billionaires' wealth increased by a third, with some doubling their wealth. Prime Minister, isn't it time to make the billionaires and big corporations pay their fair share so that we can make critical investments like getting dental into Medicare? We're a wealthy country, but many people are still struggling. So in tonight's budget, will you listen to the Greens and put in place a 6% tax on billionaires' wealth and a new super profits tax on big corporations making excessive profits?
The Prime Minister has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I got a tip for the member for Melbourne.
I won't be listening to the Greens, Mr. Speaker. Yeah.
I won't be listening to the Greens, Mr.
So do you think that we're going to have to go down that track just because that's a whole bucket of potential revenue for a future government, and at some point that's just going to look too attractive?
I think so. And it's something we should do anyway under the principle that two incomes otherwise equal should be taxed in the same way.
Yeah, and Richard, looking down the track, we've talked about, you know, that wealth is missing from the intergenerational report. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not an accident. But where does that take us, kind of, if we see wealth keep tracking and growing at the same rate it has been? Where are we going to find ourselves in, say, another 30 years' time if we're not taxing wealth properly?
Oh, look, regular listeners might remember our episode on the intergenerational report. The purpose of it is to scare the hell out of people and make one of the richest countries in the world feel poor. So, you know, mission accomplished, well done. But as Dave's highlighted, by leaving out wealth in a report about intergenerational equity, it's simply absurd. And as the amount of wealth has been growing faster and faster, far faster than, you know, average wages, for example, the disconnect between those with enormous wealth and those with very small amounts of income is just growing and growing and growing. So I think that it's inevitable for a range of not just economic reasons but social reasons that something's going to have to give. And there are plenty of countries around the world, including the US, for example, that rely on forms of property tax and wealth tax that we don't have in Australia. And, you know, Donald Trump's America wasn't usually accused of being a communist state driven by, you know,
the politics of envy.
You know, and even the old mother country. In the UK, they have forms of property and wealth tax that are significant compared to what we do here in Australia. So we've kind of got away with it for a long time, not doing anything about it, not accidentally, of course. And it's been very good for those who've accumulated these vast amounts of wealth. But really, from an economic point of view, from an equity point of view, and from a social cohesion point of view, I think it's inevitable that we're going to have to start doing something about it eventually.
We are the party of lower taxes, Mr. Speaker.
Which is, we are the party of lower taxes.
So according to The Guardian, 48 millionaire earners paid zero income tax in 2014-15.
I am not evading tax in any way, shape or form.
Dave, your paper makes the point that the failure to adequately tax capital gains is basically just an enormous advantage to the rich that most of us don't get to enjoy. How important is it for inequality?
Oh, very, very important. If we look at things like the ratio of income earned by the top 20 households compared with the bottom 20, we get a certain figure. But if you add in capital gains, that stretches the whole income distribution so much further, so that instead of around four times, we're looking at 10 times.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the apparent not too bad inequality that we see in income. When you add in increments in wealth every year, they just look so much more obscene. And this is going to get worse. And an interesting thing is that the distribution of wealth in terms of the top to the bottom doesn't look that much different from what it was 30 years ago, but it's so much higher. So that capital gains earned by the top are something like 108 times the capital gains earned by the bottom. And when you chuck that in on top of the income distribution, that makes it so much worse at the moment, but it means that when you chuck in even higher figures going into the future, the income distribution's going to get so much worse again.
So whatever we think is bad about the inequality in terms of income, it's basically twice as bad as that once you take into account wealth, and only going to get worse.
Absolutely. And the additions to wealth every year, at the moment, they're trending at about half of income, but soon they're going to dominate. So the way unrecorded capital gains make income distribution look worse now is going to be so much worse again going into the future.
So we've touched a little bit on what we can do to fix it. Dave, are we just talking about just taxing it better? What are the different ways that we could tax wealth or generate more revenue from this massive explosion in wealth that's concentrated amongst very few people?
Well, I think a wealth tax is fairly well inevitable sometime, and it may come about through gentle increments. So, for example, we may start off with an inheritance tax, for example. Some states are experimenting with, you know, land taxes, which starts to tackle some parts of people's wealth. But there are problems with that. But another important thing that we haven't touched on yet is that there's a lot of tax avoidance in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And that tax avoidance usually takes place by way of disguising income itself as some sort of increase in wealth, which, as we've discussed, is not taxed at all in Australia. So if you own a legal practice, for example, you can call yourself a company, pay yourself a minimum wage, and have all the income received as corporate income, and there are various tax deductions and whatnot available for you there. But by doing that, you're accumulating assets in this corporate vehicle rather than declaring income and being taxed at the appropriate rate on it. So not only is capital gains something that's going to happen anyway and is big, but so long as we don't tax it properly, we leave open these avenues so that by disguising your personal income as corporate income, instead of being taxed at 47% or whatever, you might get taxed, if at all, at 25%, the rate for small companies.
So it's basically a honeypot for tax avoidance because it attracts so much less tax than just your basic income.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, think of it this way. We're saying we're going to tax wealth less than we're going to tax income. So guess what a lot of wealthy people spend a lot of time doing? Paying their accountants to help them package up their income and call it wealth. And as Dave said, you know, imagine you've got a company, you own the company, you pay yourself a wage, and if you don't pay yourself a wage, you can let the money accumulate inside the company. And then one day you can sell the company with all those accumulated earnings. So there are ways that some people, not most of us, there are ways that some people can protect their income from tax, turn it into wealth, which is taxed far, far more generously, and the consequence is an increase in inequality. You know, we need a tax system that reduces inequality, not a tax system that exaggerates it.
Yeah.
Getting back to the intergenerational report, this is usually sold, often sold anyway, as a young versus old thing. So all the younger people, the younger generations who are having problems getting into housing but still paying tax at 25-30% depending upon their income, they're told that the problem for them is that we have to support all these old people and that's going to get worse in the future. In fact, as we've discussed, the old people hold most of the wealth. So the real problem in Australia is not young versus old, but old versus old. Despite, you know, the huge wealth among many old people, we're always going to have the majority in retirement on fairly low, dismal salaries, incomes, and who need lots of government services. So the question really is, how do we transfer all the capital gains and all the accumulated wealth from a few old people to the bulk of the old people who need all those services? That's the real challenge. So for the young people at the moment, their challenge is not to support old people, but how to make the rich old people pay their fair share.
I just think it's really important to realise that this problem is not beyond us if we want to solve it. And plenty of other countries in the world have far less income inequality than Australia, far less wealth inequality than Australia, and effective not just income tax and profits tax systems, but wealth tax systems. If we wanted to emulate them, we could. And obviously, there's a lot of wealthy people in Australia who don't want to emulate them. But it is possible to fix it, if we want to, and it won't. The sky won't fall. There's no country in the world that's put a tax on wealth that's made people think, "Oh, I'd rather be poor." So, you know, let's not exaggerate the consequences of doing this. It's not beyond our wit if we want to fix it.
All right. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much, Dave and Richard. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 24th of August, 2021, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit australiainstitute.org.au for all our latest research, including Dave's paper on wealth. And we're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Richard Dennis is at RDNS_TAI. And David Richardson is at Daver01. That's Dave RR01. Our producer Jennifer Macy is at Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Stay safe out there, everyone, and thanks for listening.